And welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, August 21st. My name is Shona Strausser. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll talk with Tish Satre about Beat the Odds, upcoming race, and Cancer Connection. We'll also talk with Dixie Belcher and Elaine Schroeder about a very fascinating Thai activist that's coming to town, just an amazing man. We'll talk with Charles Rohrabacher about Icons for Iraq, and we'll hear about the Orange is the New Black party Friday night at Rockwell. We'll also hear Arts Up, all the arts happening here around town. Writer's Almanac and more here on Juno Afternoon. But first, National Native News. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders from Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota are scheduled to meet with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency today. Many leaders say they want the EPA to stop mining activity in the Pinoki Range. Mike Simonson reports.
Led by Northern Wisconsin's Chippewa Federation of Tribes, leaders will argue that the EPA must step in now and use a section of the Clean Water Act to preserve the pristine waters of Lake Superior. The provision would stop drilling and data collection by Gogebic Taconite until federal regulators decide if the mine would do irreparable damage to the area. GTAC is proposing to build the largest open-pit iron ore mine in North America in an area that would flow into the Lake Superior watershed. Lac des Flambeaux President Tom Molson says they're going into these meetings with their eyes wide open.
Have we trust the federal government in their endeavors to do things right for us? Probably not. You know, they haven't lived up to their bargain with America and Indians, you know, back then. What makes them think that they're going to live up to them now?
But Molson says their mistrust is even greater with the state government. He says Wisconsin has passed laws favorable to the mining company and ignored the nearby tribes, even to the point of passing a law creating an off-limit zone to the proposed mining area.
That's within the Cedar Territory. Maybe we need to sue SeaTac, or we need to sue the state of Wisconsin in our endeavors to get on that piece of property, because we're not going to do any damage to it. So I guess, you know, we need to be a partner to whoever's going to go and really take a hard look at what the major impact would be if they were to mine.
The EPA used a section of the Clean Water Act in February to suspend mining activity by the Pebble Mine Company because it threatened the pristine Bristol Bay in Alaska. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
On Wednesday, Interior Secretary Sally Jewell issued an order reaffirming the department's trust responsibility to tribes. It includes seven principles, like supporting tribal sovereignty, protecting tribal lands, and building partnerships. Jewell made the announcement during a visit with leaders of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes in Montana. Federal officials point to resolutions of the Cobell Indian Trust Settlement and nearly 80 separate tribal trust cases as steps in improving government-to-government relations. The meeting in Montana addressed current initiatives, including an agreement on a land buyback program and climate change impacts on natural resources. A National Science Foundation grant will fund a five-year pilot project to increase the number of Native Americans with advanced degrees in science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM. $1.5 million was awarded to the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. KNBA's Jocelyn Estes reports.
National Science Foundation Program Officer Sally O'Connor says NSF wants to encourage Native Americans with an aptitude for STEM subjects to reach their full potential.
There is so much talent in the Native community, and it's mainly untapped. And hopefully this project will make a little dent into that and bring out the talent so that they can become leaders in our country.
O'Connor says several factors contribute to the low number of Native Americans with advanced degrees and tenured faculty positions in STEM fields, including a shortage of role models and inadequate academic training related, she says, to inadequate federal funding for education on reservations.
I mean, if we provide them with the same resources we give the best schools in the city, those students will be well prepared. sad fact is that that's not happening.
Student participants will receive a stipend of $4,500 over 2 years and funds to cover travel to meetings and events. Mentors will work with each student to set goals and to build capacity to reach those goals. For more information, visit the American Indian Science and Engineering Society's webpage at AISES.org. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Alaska Native shareholders, members of a federally recognized tribe, and their families can sign up for health insurance on the marketplace anytime. Visit healthcare.gov/tribal or call 1-800-318-2596.
A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, August 21st. And my first guest in the studio today is Tish Satry. She's a board member at Cancer Connection, here to talk about the Beat the Odds race this Saturday. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. So for those folks who actually have no idea what Cancer Connection is, can you go ahead and fill us in? Because it's a wonderful resource in our community.
Oh, thank you so much. Cancer Connection started with a group of volunteers, really, who had walked the journey of cancer and knew that there weren't a lot of resources here in town, and got together and said, we need an organization that can help folks. And at that time, it was everything from getting discounts on the airlines to, because almost everybody had to go out of town. No longer the truth. Our health care is better in this community now. Lots more options for folks, but we still have a number of people looking for travel assistance, for support, for health forums. So this group has come together. Kathy Brissett started it in 1992. She started the race.
Oh, wow.
Cancer Connection started in 1996.
Yeah, I didn't know it was that
so
long.
So we've been around a while, and we're very, Mike Miller was our founder. He was a well-known swim coach here in town. And just realized there was a lot of need in Southeast Alaska, and we're completely throughout Southeast. Most recently, we've, between our monthly support groups and our travel assistance program, we've also rented an apartment in Seattle for people going through chemo and radiation, so we keep that available. We also do a lot of one-on-one with folks when they're first diagnosed, with their family members or with individual folks. And that's such a critical time when people are seeking information and support, and we hope to be there for our friends and community members that are facing that cancer journey.
Where does someone go to get information, and how, let's say, they need that one-on-one counseling, where would they go to reach you all?
You know, the best thing to do is to give us a call at 796-2273 or look at our website, cancerconnectionak.org. And hopefully they can see there's a lot of online resource about what to go, where to go, different. But we don't endorse any particular model of healthcare. What you're getting is really kind of one-on-one with another survivor about what their journey was like. And so we try to match people up with similar cancers or volunteers at events where they feel that they can make a difference. So,
do you find that it's something that also feeds the survivor, you know, helps the survivor go through? Because it seems like, you know, once you've had cancer, you've always really had cancer.
Yep, I'm a 17-year survivor, and the opportunity to give back is so important to the psyche, I think, as you've gone through the journey. And a lot of us that went through it in the 90s, it was a different time and a different place where we had to go seek treatment. And I've got 3 years clean now, and I know every cancer survivor counts their days almost like alcoholics and addicts. But it's an important part of, I think, that there were so many people there for me, whether it was an upgrade or taking care of my child or a meal or a pat on the back or a squeeze at the grocery store. It doesn't matter. And to be able to start to give that resource back to other folks. And so I'm a consummate fundraiser for the cause, because to me that's how we can help make a difference and make it easier when people are dealing with that journey. And that's where Beat the Odds comes in.
That's great. So Beat the Odds is this Saturday?
It is. It's our signature fundraiser for Cancer Connection. Initially started by Kathy and Ron Brissett, who is a breast cancer survivor, and she felt her need to give back to the community. Then Glacier Valley Rotary picked it up when it got too big for a couple to handle, and then they graciously gave it to Cancer Connection. And you know, it's just so empowering to see anywhere from 350 to 500 people come together for the cause. Hopefully Saturday will be a great morning, but, you know, that has never stopped people from coming out and supporting us. And people can register up until noon tomorrow on Friday for the advance fee, and after that they're certainly welcome to just walk over to Riverbend Elementary, the covered play area there, and join us at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning.
And how long is there a walk and a run? And
correct.
How long are they?
We've got a 5K run and a 2K walk. And actually, the walk's, I think, a teeny bit shorter this time because we ended up having, with all the construction going on down there, our normal route was not available to us. So we're going to send people around Thunder Mountain High School and kind of through the woods in a little different way this year.
That's great. So it's important to, you know, I've been to the race before, and you don't have to be a runner, really.
Oh, gosh, no. Oh, gosh, I that would probably eliminate most of us that actually come. There are some very serious runners, and we love that part of the event and the competitiveness and the empowerment that feels, especially for those survivors that are training again and really getting their physicality back. But it doesn't matter if you're a survivor or not, to come out and support the cause. Doesn't matter what the weather is. It will be a competitive race on the 5K. And then everybody comes together at the end for some fabulous door prizes. And we have a speaker that will share her story of her cancer journey this year. And it's a pretty inspiring time to come. It's a nice place to start your Saturday morning.
And is there a registration fee?
Yes, we're $25 in advance, $30 day of event.
And is it something that if you can't make it to the event, is it something that you could sponsor a runner, or does that exist?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, a number of people just write no shirt and send in a donation to do it. We've had people come in and pay for some kids. You know, it's a wonderful opportunity to give back. Some people come for the shirt. You know, it's orange this year. I know there's a lot of people that are fans. it's a bright and fun color.
Like Hunter Orange?
It's a little brighter than that. Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Cool.
Mean, it's different for us. I mean, we're a little bit, we've been a little subtle in the past. So this is a fun one. And it's funny. You always get a couple calls a year. What color is the shirt?
Nice.
You know, we try to keep it under wraps right until we get there. But it's a great time. We have Foggy Mountain comes through and gives us Fox River socks for people to wear. Super Bear comes through and has food for us and gives us flowers to give people after they've gone through the walk. We have Memorial Hearts that people can make a donation and purchase and wear in the honor of somebody that's either been lost to cancer or going through it. And we'll have our Cancer Connection information table there as well. Plus, what a grand opportunity to see your friends and neighbors and get out and get some good exercise on a Saturday morning.
That's right. And it's an interesting, you know, as I think about friends and family and loved ones, really, even though if you haven't gone through cancer yourself, there's definitely someone you know or care about in this community, especially.
It's 1 in 4, 1 in 3, depending on male or female, nationwide. And cancer touches everybody's life. It's a disease that touches the whole family when it hits. It takes a village to hold me together when I'm going through stuff, and it touches everybody. And I think that the fact that the money stays here locally, that the shirts are paid for by sponsorship by our local business communities, and I would like to mention who's on the shirt. It's Alaska Airlines, Anchor Electric, Outdoor Warehouse Embroidery, Bartlett Foundation, Bartlett Hospital, Baxter Bruce and Sullivan, Diagnostic Radiology, LG Rayfield Mertz, Fox River, GCI, the Inland Boatmen's Association, Juno Bone and Joint Center, Cath TV, K3 Radio, the Juno Radio Center, Longaberger, Northern Lights Team, McDonald's, Nell Wagner, NAO, Printing Trade, Remax, Sea Alaska Corporation, Southeast Medical, Super Bear, Valley Medical, Wells Fargo Bank, and CCTHITA. And we can't thank those folks enough because they make sure that everything we earn on Saturday goes directly to survivors. And in regards to whether or not it's our health forms or travel assistance or what we need to do to take care of folks when they're on their cancer journey. So we appreciate those sponsors, and we hope everybody shows up on Saturday morning.
That's wonderful. Thank you for coming by, for sure. And can you give us the website one more time?
You bet. CancerConnectionAK.org.
Tish, thank you so much, and all the best on the such a great, fun race, and it's so meaningful.
Thanks so much.
And here is Bird Note for Thursday, August 21st.
This is Bird Note. We're walking along a stream, and we hear what sounds like a sneeze in a dense thicket. Should we reach for binoculars? Or maybe a handkerchief? This sneezy song belongs to a willow flycatcher, a small gray-green bird singing from atop a nearby shrub. Willow flycatchers nest across the northern two-thirds of the U.S. and southernmost Canada. A subspecies, known as the southwestern willow flycatcher, nests in the southwest as far east as Texas. In June, territorial males sang almost nonstop, and with a little less gusto in July. Before long, their sneezy songs will fall silent. By late August, with their young fledged and out on their own, willow flycatchers begin a long migration to winter in southern Central America. Some will travel 4,000 miles to reach southern Panama, quite a trek for a bird weighing less than half an ounce. The southwestern willow flycatcher was listed as endangered in 1995. It's just one of 300 bird species that can benefit each time Congress votes to continue funding the Endangered Species Act. Learn more at birdnote.org. Today's show brought to you by the Lufkin Family Foundation.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, August 21st. Thanks for tuning in. Our second guests in the studio are Rob and Elaine Schroeder, and Rob is a board member for the Juno World Affairs Council, and they're both here to talk about this amazing man that I'll let you pronounce his name, but welcome to the studio.
Thank you, and I'll pronounce his name. It's Sulak Sivaraksa.
Great, and he is a Thai activist and really just incredible.
He's a really amazing person. Elaine and I have known of him for quite a few years, but we've never met him. And then it just so happens that we're able to get him to come to Juno to give a talk for the Juno World Affairs Council on Wednesday, September 3rd. And that talk will be at 5 p.m. at the KTOO studio. Now, Sulak, and he usually goes by Sulak probably because so many of us can't pronounce Sivaraksa. He's a longtime political activist. It's almost in the Gandhian tradition. His NGO and his base of operations in Thailand is at an ashram that he founded. And ashram, of course, is something that Gandhi founded. And it's basically sort of a Hindu South Asia concept. But he's basically been a political activist for most of his adult life. He's now 82. So he has the perspective of 82 years, and he's still really sharp. And also, just in reading his recent works, I think he wants to say it now while he has a chance.
And what, Elaine, what kind of, how did you come to know about him, and what draws you to him?
Well, by chance, Bob and I are, well, this is the, Bob and I are leaving tomorrow for a peace and human rights conference in Oakland, California, where he's the keynote. And I mentioned it to a friend of mine, two friends of mine, Dixie Belcher and Linda Buckley. And they had been on a human rights tour with him in Thailand many years ago, and Dixie Belcher had kept in touch. And it turns out that email exchange, and hey, why not come up from Oakland? So he's actually going to be giving two talks. We're here mainly to talk about the Juneau World Affairs Council talk on Wednesday. But Sulak, I've known of him for many years. As he started out when he was younger being active in human rights issues concerning the corruption in the endless procession of Thai military governments, and he's moved on to a world stage.
Now, Sulak, for the Juneau World Affairs Council, we asked him to speak on specific events in Thailand. Many Juneau residents have been to Thailand. They've had wonderful times there. They enjoy having Thai friendships, and frankly, a whole lot of us are baffled by the political events going on in this beautiful country. And Sulak has been involved in political action in Thailand for, at least 30 years, 40 years. And he's particularly outspoken. He doesn't appear to belong to any political party or have any desire for direct action. So we're hoping that he'll kind of unpack the events that are going on in Thailand and really let us know something of what's going on there and what the social forces are at work.
And he'll also, I think, be covering some other countries in Southeast Asia. So he's really looking at unrest in Southeast Asia, Thailand included. And then Friday night he'll be talking on climate change. He recently had a book published called The Wisdom of Sustainability, and that'll be his topic at UAS.
Yeah, really, he'll be speaking from his book on Friday, September 5, on the wisdom of sustainability. And climate change is part of that, but he really takes a hard look at consumerism and capitalism and whether economic growth is really what it's cracked up to be for the poor and the normal people in Southeast Asia.
It's interesting because, he is a Buddhist, yes?
Yes.
And so he actually does a lot. It's interesting that you mentioned that he's not necessarily a political have a party or an affiliate.
A political actor.
Right.
Directly.
But he does mention, I just did some research on him, that he is, he believes that to be Buddhist is to be political and vice versa. It's very interesting.
To be active in alleviating human suffering wisely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. Can you tell me or tell us what the dates are?
Okay, the talk that we're really here to introduce is the Juneau World Affairs Council talk, which is on Wednesday, September 3 at 5 p.m. Right here in KTOO in the new studio, and that's sponsored by Juneau World Affairs Council. The council brings anywhere from 6 to a dozen speakers a year to inform Juneau on all manners of topics of world affairs. World Affairs Council takes no stand on anything, so we attempt to bring in lots of speakers, hopefully some you agree with and some you may not.
Yeah, and it's amazing. The World Affairs Council has just brought forth, sometimes it feels like we can live in a vacuum up here in Juneau. And basically what you're doing is constantly bringing us information about what's going on in the world and with really relevant speakers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Sulak's second talk is on Friday, and there'll probably be some other announcements concerning that, but that concerns the wisdom of sustainability. And he'll be speaking as the lead-off speaker for Evening at Egan at 7 p.m., and that's at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall.
Does the Juneau World Affairs Council have a Facebook or web page that people can check out all the events? And
thanks much for asking. All you have to do is look at www.jwac.org, and if your faithful volunteers have updated it, you'll get all the information on our speakers.
That's great. And then also, if you want to learn more about Sulak, this very amazing man, you can just Google him and just tons of information.
Tons of information.
Maybe it would be good to, since I know our audience does that quite a bit, I'll just spell his name. First name is Sulak, S-U-L-A-K, and last name is Sivaraksa, S-I-V-A-R-A-K-S-A, Sulak Sivaraksa.
Rob and Elaine, thank you so much for coming on to talk about this. And, yeah, the event, I'm sure, is going to be really great. It's September 3rd at 5 p.m. here at 360 North.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And you're tuned in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, August 21st. And our next guest in the studio is Charles Rohrbacher. And you're putting on this really beautiful and important fundraiser called Icons for Iraq. And welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
I'm hoping that you can start off just by telling us what the event is, Icons for Iraq, and what you've been doing to make this fundraiser happen.
Well, this last weekend, all over the United States, Catholic parishes prayed for the Christians and the Yazidis and the other minorities in Iraq who are being subjected to just a terrible persecution and violence by the militants of the Islamic State. And, of course, this isn't anything that's new. They've been under attack and been forced out of their homes and their communities for well over 10 years since the invasion in 2003. The idea for this came, I have to tell you, I was praying for them, and I realized that I wanted to help the work of Catholic Relief Services and the Catholic Near Eastern Welfare Association, both of whom are on the ground in northern Iraq. And I thought, well, what do I have to offer? And I realized that I'd completed two books with original art for each book, and it was all framed and matted. And I thought, well, maybe that'd be a way forward. So, what we're doing up at the Cathedral Hall tomorrow afternoon from 4:30 to 7 is we're inviting people to come by and make a donation to either one of those organizations or to help out with refugee relief there. And if you're so moved to donate, make a big donation, and go away with a piece of original art. These are all icons. They're painted in egg tempera on Bristol board, and as I say, they're matted and framed and ready to hang on your wall.
And they're absolutely breathtaking.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. How did you? So that you said you were praying, and the idea just kind of hit you. You're like, what can I do? And this was the response.
Yeah, I just, because I would have loved to have been able to write out a check for $1,000 and realize I didn't have $1,000 to do that with. But I thought I did have this artwork. And also, if nothing else, it occurred to me that this is an opportunity for us to do something in solidarity with these suffering people. I've spoken to so many people who just say, this is such a terrible thing. This is such an awful turn of events in the last month. What can I do? And so our thought was, this would be an event where we can come together. We can, as I say, we can talk to each other and share a little bit of food and something to drink, and then, you know, write a check and support. Again, support two groups that are doing really good work. And you need to understand Catholic Relief Services and the Catholic Near Eastern Welfare Association, although they're Catholic in the name, they serve anybody who's in need. So it's not a sectarian thing. It's the group that we work with.
And so if people want to get a preview of the work, there's a place where they can also check it out online. Is that right?
That's right. I have a Facebook page for my studio, the New Jerusalem Workshop, and if you go online, there are two albums that have the work, almost all of it. There's a couple that didn't make it on, but that'll be there at the hall, but that have the work that you can look at, and then the recommended minimum donation. Again, think they're kind of like when you have a fundraiser for the radio station, there's a premium. Well, think of these as premiums for that. It's not so much for sale as make that donation or one larger. And if you're the first person to do it with that particular piece of work, it's yours. And so what I'd really like to do is I'm right in the middle of hanging it. It'll be on all the walls of the parish hall. I'm hoping that the walls will be empty by the time we wrap things up at 7 o'clock tomorrow.
That's great. Are there other organizations or other people working to assist and aid Iraqi refugees that you know of here in our community?
Well, not in our community. Although there are, think of all of the different relief and development groups, both religious and secular, things like Doctors Without Borders or CARE or Oxfam. These kinds of groups are all working in the area as well. And if you say, you know, what I really want to do is give a donation to Doctors Without Borders, great. Just the important thing is finding a way to be in solidarity. I think one of the things that in many ways that what's been happening to particularly to Iraqi Christians, most of whom actually are Catholics, there are folks, I guess, is that in many ways, what's happened to them has been kind of out of the news until very recently. I think probably the most shocking thing for many people that happened in July was that the fighters from the Islamic State went around Christian neighborhoods and they put an N in Arabic for Nazarene, which is the Arabic word for Christian, on people's houses. This meant that you could come and loot their houses and kick them out. They also put the Arabic letter for R on the houses of Shia Muslims, who, of course, were who are also being terribly persecuted in northern Iraq and are being they've been executed, they've been driven out of their homes. And then, of course, the Yazidis, who are a very small Zoroastrian sect in that part of the world. And, of course, they've been they've been given the choice of either converting to Islam or being killed. And that's, of course, been the situation that Iraqi Christians have been placed in by the Islamic State. One thing that's, I think it's really important to point out, too, is that these extreme sort of jihadists are repudiated by many other Muslims around the world, and of course, we appreciate that solidarity. One of the things that happened in Baghdad that was so moving at the time of the expulsion of the remaining Christians in Mosul, Iraq, was that about 200 or 300 Muslims joined a group of Christians in Baghdad, and they had signs that said, "We're all Iraqis. We're all Christians." And they wore that Arabic N on their clothes to show their solidarity. So, I mean, this is it's so important. It seems to me that this idea of persecuting people because of their religion, driving them out of their homes, threatening them with death, is completely unacceptable. You know, there's no absolutely no justification for treating anyone that way, and there's particularly no justification for treating the Christian minority in Iraq, you know, that way.
And sometimes being so far away from Iraq, we feel like we might be helpless. But this is actually a great way for people to get involved and you know, peripherally, but still your money goes to something that can really make a difference.
That's right. And I think one of the things that's really been a terrible burden for the Christians in Iraq is the sense that they've been abandoned, that no one knows about what's happening to them, and that the world has just forgotten about them. On Sunday, I was invited to write in the Living and Growing section, and so I shared about meeting a group of Iraqi Christians who were too late for Mass, and it was a very moving experience. This was about 2 or 3 years ago, because as soon as they knew that I'd heard about them and what was going on, I mean, they got really emotional, and some people started to cry, and they said, "They're killing us. They're driving us out of our homes." And for me, whenever I think of the Christians of Iraq, I see them and their families and their extended families, because for me, they have a human face. You know, they're real people, not just statistics in the news. And of course, we know that all of these other people, these poor Yazidis who were forced to try to find some refuge in the desert, in the mountains, you know, those are all, you know, husbands and wives and parents and children and families and villages who are you know, dying of thirst and hunger and are threatened with being killed. So, the opportunity to do something in solidarity seems really, you know, real important, I think.
Could you tell us the time one more time and where and ways to
help? Sure. The time, we're going to open the doors at 4:30, and we'll go from 4:30 to 7. That's kind of like First Friday, only we'll call it Final Friday in August. It'll be at St. Anne's Hall, which is right next to the cathedral downtown on 5th Street. And, of course, everyone is welcome. And 100% of the proceeds are going to go to Catholic Relief Services and the Catholic Near Eastern Welfare Association. It'll just take a second. Could I end with a prayer? This is the prayer that the Archbishop of Baghdad has asked Catholics around the world to pray. And he says, Lord, the plight of Iraq is desperate, and the sufferings of Christians is severe and frightening. Therefore, we ask you, Lord, to spare their lives and to grant them patience and courage to continue their witness to Christian values with trust and hope. Lord, peace is the foundation of life. Grant the people of Iraq the peace and stability that will enable them to live with each other without fear and anxiety and with dignity and joy. Glory be to you forever. Amen.
Thank you. Charles Rohrbacher, thank you so much. Here to talk with us about Icons for Iraq happening Friday, August 22nd. That's tomorrow, 4:30 at St. Anne's Hall. And here is Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 21st of August, 2014. It's the birthday of the novelist Robert Stone, born Brooklyn, 1937, raised by his mother, who was schizophrenic, and when she went into an institution, he went into a Catholic orphanage. Sometimes he and his mother would drive cross-country and end up in a Salvation Army shelter or a random hotel. He said, my early life was very strange. I was a solitary. Radio fashioned my imagination. Dropped out of high school, joined the Navy, moved to New York City, worked as a copy boy at the Daily News, went briefly to NYU, got married, moved to New Orleans, and there he was inspired to write his first novel entitled A Hall of Mirrors, which came out in 1967. Robert Stone served as a correspondent in Vietnam for a British magazine, where he got material to come home and write the novel Dog Soldiers. Came out in 1974, story of a burnt-out playwright, John Converse, who leaves the fading counterculture of California to work as a correspondent in Vietnam and ends up smuggling heroin out of the country. It won the National Book Award. Robert Stone said, writing is lonely. Most of the time you're in a room by yourself. Writers spend more time in rooms, staying awake in quiet rooms, than they do hunting lions in Africa. So it's a bad life for a person because it's so lonely and because it consists of such highs and lows. And there's not always anywhere to take these emotional states. It's a life that's tough to sustain without falling prey to some kind of beguiling diversion that's not good for you. It's the birthday of the poet X.J. Kennedy, born Joseph Charles Kennedy, Dover, New Jersey, 1929, grew up working class, Irish. His father was a timekeeper at the local boiler factory. He recited poems to his son, who went off to college and started writing poetry of his own, served in the Navy for 4 years. He said, I enlisted in the Navy to avoid serving in the infantry. I'd also been reading Moby Dick, and I had a rather glamorous view of the seas. X.J. Kennedy, who said, I like poems where you don't really know whether to laugh or cry when you read them. Here's a poem for today by Maxine Kuhlman, The Lower Chesapeake Bay. Whatever happened to the cross chest carry, the head carry, the hair carry, the tired swimmer, put your hands on my shoulders and look in my eyes, retrieval? And what became of the stride jump when you leap from impossible heights and land with your head above water so that you never lose sight of your drowning person? Or if he is close enough, where is the lifesaver ring attached to a rope you can hurl at your quarry, then haul him to safety? Or as a last resort, where is the dock onto which you tug the unconscious soul, place him face down, clear his mouth, straddle his legs, and press with your hands on both sides of his rib cage to the rhythm of out goes the bad, ere in comes the good, and pray he will breathe. Hallowed methods we practiced. Over and over the summer I turned 18 to win my water safety instructor's badge. And where is the boy from Ephrata, Pennsylvania, I made out with night after night in the lee of the rotting boathouse at a small, dank camp on the lower Chesapeake Bay? Maxine Kuhlman's poem, The Lower Chesapeake Bay, from Where I Live, New and Selected Poems, 1990 to 2010, published by W.W. Norton and Company, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, August 21st. My name is Shona Strasser. The next guest here on Juno Afternoon is Joe Wolfenstein, talking about Orange is the New Black Party. What is that, Joe?
Well, if you've never seen the show, then it's essentially a story about a woman who gets caught for doing a crime 10 years after the fact and has to go serve 15 months in prison. And it's a women's prison, and it's all about drama and hilarity and the different things that happened to her while she was in this facility. And so we're basing our event off of this theme. So it's a prison theme. It's not exclusive to women, though. There are plenty of characters in the show that are not women. There are admin characters or prison guards or the fiancé from outside of the prison. Lots of different roles. So anyone is welcome to come, but essentially we're going to spend a night in prison together.
And so this is actually prison for a cause. It's not just prison to party. It's actually prison for a cause. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right, yeah. So we have a farm that we're associated with in the Masaka district of Uganda, and we've done a lot of different projects with them in the past, and this one specifically is to raise money to buy them a freshwater drill. It's a human-powered drill, so they can use it anywhere, anytime they want, and it will dramatically decrease the cost of getting them fresh water over there. So it's eventually going to bring fresh water to tens of thousands of people throughout the entire region.
And so you did another event, how long ago was that event and how was it?
It was 2 months ago, and it was the Mad Men Party, and it was fantastic. We raised over $2,700 at that event for this specific cause. And we are now only $3,100 away from reaching our goal to purchase this drill and get it over to them. So we're so close. And if we get the right attendance and the right kind of crowd there that's willing to party with us in prison, then I truly believe that we can hit our goal with this event.
That's great. Can you talk about the details? When is it, and what should you wear and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so it's tomorrow night at Rockwell, and it starts at 9 p.m., and we'll just party till the dawn comes in, who knows, until we're done partying. And a lot of people have been asking, you know, what do we wear for this, because I don't have a prison jumpsuit just lying around at home. But it's pretty simple. There are scrubs at Walmart that are pretty cheap. You can wear a white T-shirt and a pair of sweatpants if you want, because that's kind of the attire that the prisoners wear when they're out in the yard. You can also wear a suit and come as one of the admin characters. You can wear a very tight skirt and some heels and come as Natalie Figueroa. There's so many different options. And you know what? You don't even have to dress up. It's not required. There is a costume contest, but you don't have to participate. So if you've got absolutely nothing to wear, then just wear your street clothes and come on in and have fun with us.
And is there a DJ? Is there dancing? Is there food? What's going on at the event?
Yeah, there is a specialized playlist from DJ Danomite. So he's put it together for us. We'll be playing that throughout the evening. There are signature drinks that will be receiving a portion of those proceeds to go to our cause. We also have a specialized menu, and if you watch the show, you'll think it's absolutely hilarious that one of the items on the menu is a bloody donut. So come and see what that's all about. And there's also you buy tickets at the door or in advance, but tickets in advance get you a free pint of beer. So you can get a free drink while you're there. Lots of different things going on.
How much does the event cost, and where can people get tickets beforehand?
The event is $20, and beforehand you can get them at Rockwell, or you can call me at 907-612-1551. And there are so many different activities going on while you're there, so it's worth the $20. There's a build-your-own prison shank station, a mugshot station. You can pay to throw your friends in the shoe. You can play ping pong, lots of different fun things going on. And also, if you purchase tickets in advance, you're automatically entered to win a 9-mile drop from Coastal Helicopters, which is good for up to 6 people, depending on weights. And you can use it for heli skiing or dropping at a cabin or just dropping on top of a mountain if you want. So lots of different options with that. And that's just by purchasing your tickets in advance.
That's great. So this is all a fundraiser for Groundwork Opportunities. And that is actually an international organization. Is that correct?
Yeah, they're based in California and San Francisco, but they have projects going on all over the world. Ours specifically is in Africa, in Uganda. The drill we're purchasing is being manufactured in Kenya, so we're supporting a lot of different communities over there. They've got things going on in Cambodia and Ecuador and Congo. I mean, tons of different places. They're a wonderful organization. It's groundworkopportunities.org if you'd like to check it out.
Great. Joe, thank you so much. Have so much fun with the Orange is the New Black party happening tomorrow night, 9 p.m. at the Rockwell.
Yes, thank you.
Dressed in their
And you're tuned in to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, August 21st. My name is Shona Strasser, and here with Arts Up is Ariel from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah. So, of course, as always, we have a busy arts week. What are we starting with?
Well, let's see. Tonight we have a few things going on. There's karaoke night at McGivney's. Let's see. Tomorrow we have the Human Experience film showing at the Goldtown Nickelodeon, and that'll have Peruvian refreshments and a presentation about children living in Peru today, and all of the proceeds go to Hogar de San Francisco ACES Home for Destitute and Disabled Children. Tomorrow we also will be launching our new season at the Jack, so you can buy your tickets starting tomorrow for the new concert series and events.
Oh, wow. Season tickets on sale.
Yeah, very cool. It's pretty exciting for us. And then this weekend, there's a ton of things going on. We have the Community Garden Harvest Fair out at Montana Creek, and they're going to have all sorts of really fun things. It's from 11 to 1:30. They're going to have chicken bingo, fair food, vegetable and flower exhibits, garden tours, and a farmer's market.
What is chicken bingo?
I'm not sure, but it sounds really interesting.
you mark your page with a chicken. That's the marker? I don't know.
I'm not sure. I feel like I think that it's wherever they drop. Like, they have a grid, and the chickens kind of run around, and wherever they, like,
poop. Do their thing.
Yeah, do their thing.
Uh-huh. Well, that's awesome.
That's what I've heard of it before, but I don't know if that's how they're doing
I hope it is how they're
I
doing
hope it. Is.
Yeah. Okay, what else? We digress.
Okay, so we've also got Young Miss Juno happening on Saturday, and that's at 4 o'clock at the Jack.
Is that a pageant?
It is.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
I know. I don't have a whole lot of information about that, but you can Google them and probably find out more information. There's also, let's see, on Sunday, there's the weekly ukulele jam at TK McGuire's, and that's at 11 o'clock. And then we have our Music on the Fly concert series at 6:45, and that's out at the airport. We have the Juno String Ensemble listed to play that night, so you can go and enjoy some nice calming music and wait for your flight.
They'll sound great there. The acoustics there are kind of awesome and strange, and they're going to sound really cool.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And so that's all free, of course. And then there's also at the Goldtown Nickelodeon, again, they're doing a really cool not-so-silent film with Charlie Chaplin's The Circus, and the Rattletrap Ruckus is going to play music to the silent film.
Have you been to one of them before?
I haven't. They are awesome.
I'm really excited. Like, they're just so much fun, and the music is always wonderful, and the crowd is really into it. It kind of reminds you, you know, how movies should be. Really participatory.
Experiential.
Definitely. Yeah, and it's three showings, right?
I know. It's so much music. And so they start at 2 o'clock, and then there's a 7:30 show and a 9 o'clock show, and you can get tickets online. If you can go through their website, the Goldtown Nickelodeon website. I can't remember what it is. And then also on brownpapertickets.com.
Yeah, and Colette Costa will be here tomorrow on Juno Afternoon and talk more about that. So,
cool.
Yeah. What else we got?
All right. So then we also have on Sunday at 4 o'clock, the Sandbar is doing a talent show. And and so they're going to have a barbecue, and they're asking for any type of talent in Juno. And anyone under 21 is also able to compete as long as they have their parents present.
That's totally wonderful.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Best fish and chips.
Oh,
Sandbar.
Yeah. I know. Juno's
That's
secret.
Very funny.
Okay. So Tuesday, let's see, not much going on Monday, but Tuesday next week, there's history story time at the City Museum, and that's for free at 11 o'clock. And then at 6:30, there's a sci-fi movie at the Marie Drake Planetarium, and that's Deep Impact. So that'll be kind of cool.
Wow.
Yeah, and so that's kind of the rundown for the week.
Super. Where can people get this calendar if they're like, I need to get this, I need to read something?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot more that's on here, too, that's weekly occurrences that I just didn't read off today. But if you want to go to the JAC website, the Juno Arts and Humanities Council website, it's www.jahc.org. Yeah, and then the Empire also has a lot of good calendaring.
And KTOO also shares the Arts and Humanities Council calendar, community calendar. You could check that out at ktoo.org. Ariel, thank you so much for coming here to do Arts Up.
Thank you.
Much appreciated. This is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Ock Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Thanks so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow, same time, same place, different host. You'll hear all sorts of things. You'll talk with Colette Costa. You'll talk with Catherine Rue about her brand new book. And you'll find out about Food Truck Friday. I think that's happening. Rob Royce will be there also. Tune in tomorrow. Thank you very much.